It's time for episode 552 of the Clockwise Podcast from Relay FM, recorded Wednesday, May 1st, 2024. Clockwise, four people, four tech topics, 30 minutes.
Welcome back to Clockwise, the tech podcast that may be so over April. I am one of your hosts, Micah Sargent, and I am joined across the internet by my good pal, my friend. It is Dan the Man Morin. Hello, Dan.
Mayday, mayday. Hi, Micah. It's good to be here on this first day of May. Wow, May already.
I know. Oof. Time flies.
And I don't like it.
Kind of like the whole thing I'm about this podcast, right? We talk about how time flies.
We're trying to make the most of it. Let's go.
So let me introduce the person to my left is the chief podcaster at podfeet.com. It's Allison Sheridan. Welcome back to the show, Allison.
Well, delighted to be here. This is bound to be a good time.
And to my left this week, it is a photographer and a coffee enthusiast and the author of the new book, Take Control of iPhone Photography. It is, of course, Jeff Carlson. Welcome back, Jeff.
Thank you. Always happy to be here. I may be awake.
Have you had coffee? Never mind.
While we all have the necessary caffeine, let us head into the show. You know how this works. Four topics, 30 minutes. And mine for you is this. If at all, where or how would you like to see Apple implement generative AI functionality in iOS? Allison, we'll start with you.
I think I've got a good one here. What about some help in photos? I want to be able to say, hey, S lady, remove the power lines from the photos I took of roses on my walk yesterday. Or like, hey, S lady, remove my brother Bob from the family reunion photos. Or how about, hey, S lady, fix my belly flab in the photos from Hawaii. I think that would be really swell.
That's pretty good. I there's a couple of places. It depends how generative we're talking, right? Like one of the things that came to mind is sometimes I do little sketches in Notes. And you know how sometimes when you're doing markup with the Apple Pencil or whatever, you can draw like your ragged circle and iPadOS will make it a nice, mm-hmm. perfect circle for you. Can I just have that with every single thing I draw so that I draw a really terrible squiggle and it's like, oh, now it's a beautiful portrait. Because I'm terrible. I'm terrible at it. I draw stick figures. That's the best I can do. And maybe it could help me in that regard. Other places, you know, there are cases where I wouldn't mind being able to get some sort of summarized information, especially about things like, I don't know, I get a lot of emails and like maybe if it could just give me a summary like, oh, there's only like one summary. Here's the summary of all your emails today. And this is what's actually worth paying attention to, or summarizing documents or something like that. I think that I would appreciate it. I think Allison's photo example is also really good. And I feel like there's lots of places in photos where I don't take the best photo I could. And being able to adjust that after the fact with some sort of AI addition might be really handy. And then it just really depends how generative you mean by generative AI stuff. Like, obviously, I'd love to see Siri be a little smarter about how it does things. And maybe if that involves some use of being able to generate more information or use more context or converse in a more human manner, all of those things could be very useful. But, you know, on a day-to-day basis, I don't use AI that much. And so I'd like Apple to really sell me on this idea if it's going to do it. Jeff, what about you?
I think I would also like more of the, maybe not generative, but the AI side of things, so that when I ask a question, I'm getting better answers. And I know that, you know, the LLMs can hallucinate and all that. Hopefully, you know, maybe Apple will figure out a way to make that better. But also just to be able to give me more options and fewer instances of, gosh, I can't really help you with that. Maybe you should go look at it on your phone. It should be a bit smarter, and it should also do a much better job of recognizing things like when I say, hey, S lady, turn on the lights in the living room. Sometimes it'll be like, turn on, yes, so I'll just start playing music. it has to be smarter at some point. And we've been waiting for this for a long time, and maybe AI, LLMs, whatever, can unlock that.
Fingers crossed. Yeah, I also want generative AI to come to the camera and photos. I think it would be so cool if it was kind of more aware of the photo I was trying to take. And there could be kind of like a little coach, a little camera coach that said, oh, it looks like you're trying to take a photo of a group. And so you should, you know, move the phone up a little bit or the lighting. Oh, silly person, you've got the sun in the background. That's not how you want it. You want it with the sun kind of facing the group. So they're all lit up. And then to bring that into photos, I would love to have more help when it comes to photography specifically. And then, yes, like many of you, I also would like to see that virtual assistant from Apple get some improvements just in general, because right now I don't use it at all. I haven't for mostly at all. And I haven't for a long time because every time I've used it, it just disappoints me. So to see some changes there that actually have a positive impact would be nice. All right. Thank you all for your answers on that topic. Let us go to our next one, which comes from Allison.
Well, when you run into wonky network problems in your home, what is your process to diagnose the problems, and exactly how long is it until you give in and actually call a vendor for help?
As somebody who used to like set up network stuff for a living briefly, the answer is I almost never call anybody for help. I have a suite of tools that I use, you know, and I have all these things from back when I used to do troubleshooting where it's like, all right, you know, first things we're going to check is like, our domain name's resolving. No, it's DNS. Spoiler, it's always DNS. you know, can I get through on an IP address? Is it the gateway getting stuff, you know, stuff reaching the router? Is stuff getting out to the internet? Like all of that stuff. So, you know, I spend a lot of time in terminal when you need to troubleshoot those things. And there are some very good terminal tools in macOS, Traceroute, Ping, all that stuff. But I have a love-hate relationship with troubleshooting network problems because it's frustrating and nobody likes it. But at the same time, I feel like it's a personal challenge and I need to be able to, you know, to come out on top. So it takes a lot for me to give up on troubleshooting things. Fortunately, my system's pretty good right now. I got to knock on all the wood. Yeah. This is all just laminate. No. Jeff, what about you?
Usually what I will do is just start with my wireless router. I have an Eero and sometimes it will just stop. And typically restarting that and the little little satellite devices, restarting those will do the trick. And if that doesn't help, then I start looking into, all right, is my fiber feed, has that gone down? And then after that, it's just a process of like seeing what's working and honestly just restarting a lot of stuff, like a lot of HomeKit stuff, like turn the lamps off, turn them back on again. I don't really go to vendors for networking support. Fortunately, I have a lot of smart friends who I can say, hey, Dan, what's going on here? And then he says, well, it's DNS. And then, of course, it's DNS. So that tends to work for me.
When I first moved in, there were quite a few problems that I had with my network. And so I had to go through a series of different changes, including discovering that a network splitter had been installed for the cable and finding out that the cable that comes in was not going directly to the modem, but instead was going to the splitter, which was then, you know, passing signal throughout the home for devices that I didn't have connected because I don't have cable in the house. And I don't have cable TV. And so I purchased an amplifying splitter and that solved a lot of the early problems that I had. Ever since then, knock on bamboo, I have not had many issues, if any, that couldn't be solved by just turning it off and back on again. But if things got, you know, bad enough, I think eventually I would call. But much like Siri, I don't know if I really have faith that the person on the other end of the line is going to be able to help me with whatever the problem is. So I avoid that as much as I possibly can. Allison, why don't you round us out here?
This is perfect because all of y'all, it's like I know I'm with my tribe because my answer is exactly what y'all have said. And I almost think that people who don't know anything would get solved faster. Because we're going to spend all this time. I have four Eeros and Verizon Fios, And I have been trying to diagnose this problem where all kinds of weird stuff is happening, like the TV is jittery on playback of streaming, or my Eufy cameras, man, they go on and off line all day long, all day long. They're constantly going on and offline. And so I spent all this time, you know, I'm pinging things and I shut down the modem and shut down the router and then restarting the gateway back up, did all that stuff. And I just couldn't get anything fixed. And I spent, I don't know, a month doing this. And basically I had no idea what to do next. Finally, I went around and I did speed tests, because I think the primary thing you guys skipped saying is do a lot of speed tests, because it's just like weighing yourself a lot to try to lose weight, right? That's going to solve it if you just did one more speed test. But I tested at all the different Eero's, and basically sitting in front of the gateway Eero, everything was fine. But as soon as I went to one of the others, it was just terrible. Like dropping from 250 megabits a second to 48. It was terrible. So I finally, after weeks and weeks and weeks, got Eero on the phone because a friend of mine said they're helpful. And the guy was like, yeah, you have too many devices. 68 is too many. I said, no, that's not quite enough. I think I need some more. And I demanded to talk to the higher level support. And then he started to actually help me. And it turned out I had my worst Eero was the gateway. And my best one was the one that was actually not doing very well downstairs. We swapped them and it fixed everything.
Wow.
Of course.
Okay, now I have one more tool to go through before I finally have to resort
exactly.
and call somebody. But I hate talking to people on the phone. I hate it with every fiber of my being.
Me too. Well, let us take a break because we have reached halftime here. And I want to tell you about the very awesome Ecamm, who are bringing you this episode of Clockwise. Ecamm Live is the leading video production and live streaming studio built for the Mac. And it is excellent. Ecamm does all aspects of video. It's not just live streaming. It's perfect for simplifying your workflow. It's easy enough to get started quickly, but powerful enough that you can create just about anything with video and do it all with the Ecamm app. I fire up the Ecamm app at least twice a week for the shows that I do. And one of the shows I do is not streamed live at all. It doesn't go live. And so if you think of Ecamm as this tool that's for live, don't think of it that way, because it is about so much more than just live streaming. However, it can be that. I hosted a Dungeons and Dragons adventure that raised money for St. Jude Children's Research Hospital. So it was, you know, a rather involved situation. And I used Ecamm for it through and through, for the people calling in, for the green screen keying, for the effects, for bringing in comments from the stream. I mean, everything. And it just worked so well. I love Ecamm. So whether you're streaming, recording, podcasting, or presenting, everything's there in Ecamm, including support for multiple cameras and screen sharing, and a live camera switcher lets you direct the show in real time. So stand out from the crowd with high quality video, add logos and titles and lower thirds and graphics, share your screen, drop in video clips, bring on interview guests, use a green screen, and so much more, because Ecamm Live does it all. The members are entrepreneurs, marketing professionals, podcasters, bloggers, content creators of all kinds. So get 1 month free today at ecamm.com/clockwise using the code clockwise. That's a whole month free of Ecamm Live at ecamm.com/clockwise with the code clockwise. Honestly, there's no reason if you have a Mac not to go and check it out. Go check it out. See if it's something that you want. Our thanks to Ecamm for their support of this show and Relay FM. All right, we are back from halftime, and that means it's time for Dan's topic.
So after a long hiatus, we're expecting new iPads to be unveiled next week. I'm curious, what iPad are you currently using, and what might actually convince you to upgrade? Jeff?
So I currently have an M1 iPad Pro, which is now, what are we thinking, 2 years old, 3 years old? And I bought it because, like, my previous iPad was fine. Like, it worked just fine. But then I was like, all right, it's got the M1. It's the new technology. I'm going to end up writing about it. Absolutely worth it. And there wasn't a whole lot of difference. I mean, like, there was a difference, but in terms of everyday use, it didn't seem like a big difference. So I find myself once again at that point where the iPad that I have, and I use it fairly often, does everything that I need it to. I'm not playing super games. I'm not really needing immediate ray traced graphics and all of that. So I'm kind of tempted to not do anything. I think if – I mean, I sound like a stick in the mud. Like, how can you be a tech guy and not want iPads? But maybe like an entry-level iPad to replace my old iPad Pro that the teen uses. But it's not really compelling, and I feel slightly bad about it.
Oh, don't feel bad about it. Try not to feel bad about it. So I have a 12.9-inch iPad Pro that I use occasionally and an iPad Mini, the newer design, that I use with some regularity. I don't use either of them too often. They are just occasionally handy to have. And that's because I've got my M2 MacBook Air that is just a stinking perfect machine in every single way that I find myself pulling that out before I ever pull out one of the other devices. But yeah, I don't really use them enough to justify doing an upgrade. However, there's lots of talk that we're going to see potentially the M4 chip make its way to the iPad line. And more importantly, that the latest chip is going to power lots of the generative AI features that Apple is bringing forth. And so in that specific way and you know, in that specific instance, I think it will be important to have one of the new iPads, whichever that happens to be. So I may end up with one, but it's strictly because I need to see what Apple's latest stuff is so that I can make videos and podcasts about it. But if I didn't do what I do, I don't know. Well, let me be realistic with myself. I probably would still get it, but I would definitely go for the less expensive thing. I don't think I'd upgrade the 12.9-inch or anything like that. Allison, what about you?
Well, like Jeff, I'm sporting the M1 12.9-inch iPad Pro from 2021, and I love it. I do have to say, though, Micah's right. When I got the M2 MacBook Air, the iPad sort of took a little bit of a lower ranking there because it was so light and easy to carry around. But I still have a lot of uses for the iPad Pro. Believe it or not, I use it a lot for crafting, like for knitting and crocheting, keeping track of patterns, using the pencil to mark things off. And especially in cross stitching, I'll mark off, you know, what I've finished, and I take photos of the pattern and put them in there. So I do use it a lot. The other thing is I've been testing USB-C displays recently. I've done 6 or 7 of them. And the first couple OLEDs that I looked at I was just shocked at what a huge difference OLED made to me. They're just so bright and the colors are so vivid. And these USB-C displays that are OLED are super thin and light. And so what I'm hoping is for an OLED iPad. But oddly enough, I don't miss the OLED display of my MacBook Pro when I use my MacBook Air that doesn't have the OLED display. So I'm real curious to see whether it's going to be as big of a difference as it was with these displays as it is, hopefully will be in the iPads. So I am definitely, I've had my credit card heated up for months now because they keep moving it out, and I don't feel bad about it. And I'm going to do what I can to help Apple stock Jeff.
You know, it's funny. A lot of these answers are very similar to where I am. I have a M1 iPad Pro, the 11-inch model, which I do use a lot. I've been using it more recently when I go out and do some writing because doing a little better at single task focusing. I have an M1 MacBook Air as well, so they're you know, on par with one another as far as performance goes. But it is tricky because a lot of times you're like, well, the M1 Air and the M1 iPad Pro with the keyboard, Magic Keyboard case, are about the same weight, and the Air is far more competent at a lot of things. So when I'm traveling, I'm usually bringing the M1 Air. So I don't know. Like, I have this moment. It's like, well, the M1 iPad Pro is still pretty great. It still does pretty much everything I used to do because I don't tax it particularly heavily. I was thinking about it a little bit, and I decided to borrow one from my a hobby horse from my pal Jason Snell, who's like, man, you know what would be great is if you could like virtualize macOS on an iPad. It's like, yeah, that would be pretty cool. I might actually upgrade if it were something like that. But as good as everything like the OLED screens are going to be, like, my feeling is this is going to be expensive. It's going to be very pricey. And can I justify that when I have an iPad that works just fine? I think it's really going to have some compelling features, something I totally haven't thought of. Maybe it's Magic AI, something, I don't know, in order to convince me that I should shell out probably like $1,000 for a new iPad? That's a third of a Vision Pro. I don't really know. So for me, I'm not sure that there's a lot in there that's going to necessarily make me jump at the chance, but I'm intrigued to see what is on offer. All right, let's go to our final topic, which comes from Jeff.
All right. So this week, many people, myself included, found themselves locked out of their Apple IDs, forcing a password reset. And then there have been other consequences like all of my app-specific passwords just being erased. So my question is, are these types of monolithic IDs from Apple, Adobe, Google, Microsoft, are they too centralized? Should we have different passwords for individual services?
I mean, it is a means of security, obviously, to keep you from using your Apple ID and password, actual password, on one of those services, have one of those services get breached, and then your Apple ID and password are also taken. Not great. So I understand why app-specific passwords work that way. The fact that you got locked out of your Apple ID, though, and that everybody had that, many people had those password resets is annoying. And I get the idea of having this kind of log in with Apple, log in with Adobe, log in to be frustrating. But the security behind the scenes is actually much more robust. The privacy, that's a different story, particularly if you use some of the other services outside of Apple. But the security behind the scenes is better because of the fact that you're not providing more. It's like increasing the surface area of your attack posture, which is, I don't know what language I'm speaking right now, but essentially you're giving more places for you to be targeted if you have usernames and passwords that are with these different sites. And so when you log in with your Apple ID on a site where it has signed in with Apple, not only does it help you with creating like a special email that's only tied to that service, but it's also a matter of kind of a cryptographic key handshake that takes place. So I don't know if they are, arguably they're too centralized in the means and in the sense that, yes, if something goes down, that's troublesome, but it is also a matter of heightened security, which I think is a good thing. So it's kind of a give and a take there. Allison, what are your thoughts?
I actually got really lucky. The whole getting locked out happened to me a week before everybody else got locked out, which I found really curious because I called Apple in desperation when my friend Ryan was asked to verify my Apple ID on his phone. Now, I haven't talked to Ryan in like a year. And it's like, okay, how did that happen? So I called Apple. I was like, what's going on? And they're like, no, there's no widespread thing. No, nothing's going on. And so when it came out that something was going on the following week, I'm like, I think I was the tip of the iceberg there. That was a complete nightmare. I do want to do some whining before I answer your question, because I changed my password, but then got locked out, which was even more fun with Apple on the phone. That happened. So that was neat. I interpreted Jeff's question about having this monolithic login to be across Apple devices, not using it for login with Apple, because I don't do that. I find it, I want to be in control of every one of those passwords separately, and I do it well with one password and all that. But when I look at it across all my devices, I find one of the coolest things about being a Mac and Apple fanatic in general is continuity. I love that I can scan with my iPhone into my server that I'm attached to on my Mac. I love that I can copy from one thing and paste into another. I love that I can open a website on the Mac that I just had open on my iPad. That is huge to me. And if those things, if the services were somehow splintered into separate logins, I don't think I would like that at all.
I don't think it makes things better to have it. Like, this is what we had in the web and still have in the web to a certain degree, is all this proliferation of all these different accounts. And it means you need a password manager to handle all of it for all the security reasons that have been detailed. I'm hopeful that passkeys kind of start to solve some of the problems with that, though you still need obviously something to manage it because it's not something that can be handled by you remembering your passkey. Nobody's typing in giant bunches of ciphertext. But I understand the idea that having too many things linked to a single monolithic ID can cause problems when it's like, okay, I'm locked out of that account and I literally can't get into anything. The most important thing I take away from this is not necessarily that having a big account that is connected with all of these things is bad, but that your service has to be set up to be robust and to fail gracefully when something like this happens. And this is an exact example of why you need things like communication and transparency and backups and all of that, because I have been hit by bugs with Apple's, you know, Apple ID or iCloud and stuff before. And it's just like, it's maddening because everything dies and you can't get into anything. And so many things that you depend on for your life. And what makes it worse is when the company just doesn't do anything to address it, right? Like, they don't acknowledge it. They don't explain what the problem was. They don't tell you how they're trying to fix it. They just sit there and you're left thinking, does this care about me at all? Am I a valued customer or am I just another cog in the machine? So what I take away from it is less that, you know, having a single account is a inherently bad thing and more that if you have the responsibility of controlling this much of people's lives, you better live up to that responsibility by being a good, I hate to keep using responsible partner in this way. Mm-hmm. So that is what I'm taking away for it. Jeff, why don't you wrap us up here?
Yeah, I think failing gracefully is the key bit right there. Allison said, when things work, they work great. And continuity is a great example of that. And good heavens, I do not want to have a different password for every HomeKit light bulb in my house, right? So in that sense, having everything just tied into one Apple ID or at least connected to it is great. It's just when it fails in this way, and usually it fails for some, you know, unknown reason, then suddenly you're faced with this cascade of problem solving. And actually, you know, going back into our question about the networking and how you troubleshoot, like suddenly you're in troubleshooting mode. And for the four of us, this was an annoyance for sure, but it wasn't catastrophic. But the first thing I did once it happened, and once I saw reports that it was happening to other people, first thing I did was send an email to like my family and friends tech list that's basically saying, all right, if this happens to you, here's what's going on. Because people who don't know what's going on, they may not know how to troubleshoot, or they may, you know, swamp Apple and like, why isn't this thing working? And then they go through the whole process of, well, have you reinstalled your OS? And like all that garbage that other people, quote unquote, normal people who don't and shouldn't have to deal with this suddenly have thrust upon them. So I don't have an answer, but I loved all of your answers. So thank you.
Alrighty, folks, we are just about out of time, but we've got enough time for a bonus topic. My question for you is, what is your favorite mythical creature? And Allison, we'll start with you.
Well, I didn't want to pick one of the classics. None of them really blow my dress up. So I chose one drawn by a friend of mine. He calls it the soup spoiler, and I put a link to it in the show notes. It's this really cool, crazy looking little devilish creature. He's got hands for feet and he's got dragon wings. And his whole thing is he drops flies into soup.
I love it.
That's pretty good. I have to say I've always had a fascination with the Loch Ness Monster dating back to when I was a very small kid. And thinking about being a dinosaur and how cool that would be. I've been to Loch Ness a few times, never seen it, unfortunately. But I'm going back to Scotland again this year, so maybe this time for sure.
Fingers crossed.
I'm going to kind of go back to the classics. Like, I've always liked the Pegasus. I've always liked the idea of like a grand wingspan. You can fly wherever you want. So not exciting, but still cool. Pick.
Yeah, very cool.
Okay.
For me, I have to choose the Yeti. I think they are such the concept of this bipedal teddy bear that's vicious, but also might be kind of cool and like friendly. I don't know. I want to befriend a Yeti. And so that's definitely my favorite mythical creature. Now, folks, if you are listening to this, then you should know that you can get ad-free episodes with an extra overtime topic every week by becoming a member of Clockwise. You just go to relay.fm/clockwise and sign up for $7 per month or $70 per year, and you will help support the show. In this week's overtime topic, we discuss which built-in iOS apps we most want updated. And with that, we have reached the end of this episode of Clockwise. All that's left is to thank our awesome guests for joining us. Allison Sheridan, thank you so much for your time today.
Well, I guaranteed you this was going to be a good time, and it was.
Woo! And Jeff Carlson, thank you so much for being here and being fully caffeinated.
Thank you so much.
And Micah, we'll be back next week. But until then, we remind everyone listening out there, watch what you say.
And keep watching the clock.
Bye, everybody.